Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be.
And another very good weekend, another very good Saturday afternoon to all of you. Jason Hawes here on this July 23rd, 2016 on American Faith Today, coming to you live just after 4:30 from very hot, very humid, although I've stepped outside, admittedly only briefly, and it didn't feel as bad as I thought it was going to, but still very hot, very humid Ohio. And hopefully wherever you're at, if you're enjoying or rather not enjoying that type of weather, hopefully you're staying cool and staying hydrated. We were supposed to have a 100-degree heat index day. I don't know if we've got there or if we'll get there or not, but it's hot. Let's just put it that way. But anyway, glad to have you. And even though it is hot and humid, we will walk through the figurative fires, thankfully only the figurative fires, but the figurative fires of 100-degree heat index hell to try to put together hopefully an entertaining and informative show for you. I was actually pretty busy this morning, a little bit busier than normal on a Saturday morning, and because of that, I had an idea of kind of what type of show I wanted to do today. I actually wanted to do, I was leaning towards doing kind of another Bible study based show, but especially since I was so busy last night, which I typically am on a Friday night, and then very busy as well this morning, that kind of went by the wayside, unfortunately. So I went back to one of my old standards and one of my kind of not panicked, grab a show topic or grab some show material, but sometimes when I am a little bit rushed, I do like to go to the newsforchristians.com website, which is a little bit of a news aggregating site of sorts, and pull some topics and some stories from there, and that's basically what I've done today. Now, and by the way, the chat room is open, and the call-in line, if you are out there listening live, of course, you're out there listening live, you can sign into the chat room as well. I noticed someone had earlier anyway, but that is open, and the call-in line is 347-989-8387, 347-989-8387, if you wish to call in. I decided to do the show today based off of something that I've been talking about a lot online anyway, but also from the stories that I collected from the newsforchristians.com website. Some of the stories that I collected anyway, it kind of fit in naturally and perfectly that way as well. And today's show is really building off a couple things that came out of the Republican National Convention that just finished up. And I want to start with this whole Ted Cruz. I'm going to try not to spend a whole lot of time on this whole Ted Cruz, Donald Trump flap and controversy, or mini controversy, and however you want to put it. And I don't necessarily, I'm sure, have to do a recap for you or background, but in the event that that actually is the case, that I'd have to do that. Ted Cruz, of course, was initially, Donald Trump wanted to keep Ted Cruz from speaking at the convention, both Ted Cruz and John Kasich, because they were holding out on endorsing him. John Kasich, of course, the governor here in Ohio, made the decision not to even go to the convention. And about a week or so before we had the convention, Donald Trump did meet with Ted Cruz and offered him a speaking slot at the convention, which Cruz, of course, accepted. There was no requirement for Ted Cruz to endorse Donald Trump whatsoever, and it came out of that meeting, even though some in the media speculated that an endorsement from Cruz for Trump would be coming, that was rather quickly shut down. And it was stated by Cruz, by his people, that the idea of an endorsement was not really talked about or was not agreed to. It was just he would be allowed. He was asked to speak at the convention, and he accepted. And so we get to Ted Cruz's speech at the convention, and it was a speech, by the way, that, of course, was seen, was vetted, was read, I would assume thoroughly, by Donald Trump or by his people, by Reince Priebus, by whoever needed to read it, whoever had the privilege of reading it. It was read beforehand what Ted Cruz was going to say. And again, I can't emphasize that enough. It was read, it was known beforehand what Ted Cruz was going to say. Now, Donald Trump has since claimed that Ted Cruz added one or two things, one or two lines to his speech that he did not see, that he did not vet beforehand, which was true. And from what I can tell, according to a story at Politistic, which I had posted on the American Faith Today Facebook page, what he added to his speech was, "God bless everyone." Imagine the horror of that, or "God bless you all." And he added a line in there saying that, like you, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not reading it in front of me, but saying, like you, I too hope that the values and principles that our party believes in prevail in the November election. So anyway, he does his speech. Most people regarded it, as far as the content of it goes, as a good speech. Now, one of the other things that they had a minor complaint of was they thought that Ted Cruz was going to speak for about 10 minutes. He wound up speaking for close to 25 minutes, about 24 minutes to be exact. But most people would have agreed and enjoyed, I think, the content of the speech. And where all this controversy comes from, of course, is that Ted Cruz did not do what most people thought that he should have done and endorse Donald Trump. He congratulated Donald Trump for winning the nomination, but he said that he told everybody not to stay at home. He outlined that the Democratic Party, which it was ridiculous that a RNC strategist actually accused Ted Cruz of endorsing Hillary Clinton, but that's what we're dealing with here, with this rhetoric, which again is kind of a large reason why I'm not so much depressed, but why I'm exasperated and exhausted by all this, is this ridiculously illogical, ridiculous, over-the-top rhetoric that is being thrown around back and forth. I will say I believe mostly from one side, but is being thrown around back and forth over not only the Ted Cruz speech, but this whole election cycle. How if you're not planning on voting for Donald Trump, you're automatically voting for, or not voting for necessarily, but you're automatically supporting Hillary, and it just gets ridiculous. You know, as somebody, I personally, and I've said this, I've tried to emphasize this, I've voted for the lesser of two evils before. Like, I would say pretty much all of us have. But where it becomes a game changer for me is when I believe that the actual two people, two main candidates, are literally evil, or at least objectionable people who I cannot stomach supporting in either way, either because of character, personality, not even so much policies, although I do worry about policy as well. But anyway, again, like I said, the rhetoric has me exhausted, but Cruz said, vote your conscience. And again, I'll add, he laid out that the Democratic mindset, if you will, was completely backwards. He said at one point, as I recall, that Barack Obama exports jobs and imports terrorists. He threw in the what difference does it make line to kind of take a swipe at Hillary Clinton. And he told people not to stay at home, go out, vote your conscience, vote up and down the ballot, up and down the ticket, vote your conscience, and vote for those who you believe will uphold the Constitution. Now, I mean, that's, of course, what he said. There was no endorsement of Donald Trump. Since then, we've had Donald Trump giving a press conference yesterday in which, again, he decides to criticize Ted Cruz, in which he, again, decides to blame Ted Cruz for starting all this, and, again, in which he decides to insinuate that Ted Cruz's father, Rafael Cruz, has or somehow was involved with Lee Harvey Oswald or involved in the assassination of JFK. He is doubling down on the stupid, as far as I'm concerned, and he's not going after Hillary Clinton. He's stuck on going after Ted Cruz. But I wanted to read or at least share with you two very, very, very different accounts regarding interpretations, if you will, regarding Ted Cruz's speech at the convention. Two extremely different interpretations. The first one comes from Breitbart.com, which is very much a pro-Donald Trump site. Some people even call it Trumpbart. It's written by Charles Hurt, who I'm not familiar with. There's not any real kind of bio down below. It just has his contact information, how you can contact him on social media. But it's written, the article, "The Nuclear Option, Ted Cruz Loves Himself More Than Our Country." And again, this is what I'm talking about with the over-the-top rhetoric. Charles Hurt writes, "In the end, it was all about Ted Cruz delivering an unvetted speech." It wasn't unvetted. It was not unvetted. It was completely vetted. It was read beforehand. But anyway, he writes, "Delivering an unvetted speech before the Republican National Convention on Wednesday night, Ted Cruz, as is always his custom, carefully calculated just how to do it so it would benefit himself the most, and it backfired." And again, this is another one of my things. We don't know if it backfired. We won't know if it backfired until after this election and possibly even sometime within the next president's term, if that president does happen to be Donald Trump. Now, was he booed during that speech towards the end of it? Of course. I mean, you can't deny that. He was booed. Now, you do have people who were there present at the convention who have testified or who have said that Donald Trump's delegates and Donald Trump's people were trying to whip people into booing Ted Cruz. So some of that even was fabricated or instigated or what have you. But anyway, Hurt goes on to write, "He uttered the name of his party's nominee, the man who invited him to speak, just once, only to congratulate him on the nomination." Well, how many times is he supposed to utter his name? Quite pointedly, the senator from Texas refused to endorse Donald Trump. As if to punctuate his own bitter whining over losing, now, this a guy who I presume fashions himself an objective journalist, as if to punctuate his own bitter whining over losing, Mr. Cruz actually told conventioners that New York is different from Iowa, reviving the major theme of his losing campaign against Mr. Trump, and reminding folks that, yes, he won the Iowa caucuses and for a very brief moment was the Republican frontrunner. If I recall correctly, Donald Trump himself in the past has emphasized that as a New Yorker, even saying it during an interview, that as a New Yorker, as somebody who was from Manhattan, he had different values and a different belief system than, say, people in Iowa. But, you know, let's just pursue our agenda. And I understand many of us have one, but let's just pursue our agenda and continue to bury Ted Cruz. He goes on to say, as he wound up his non-endorsement speech, the convention hall grew restless. Delegates began to realize that the rude political has-been was actually going to withhold an endorsement. In an eruption, they thrust to their feet and shouted at Mr. Cruz, "Crucify him!" Okay, no, they didn't shout that. They booed him and pounded into him, "Trump, Trump, Trump." It would have been humiliating for the senator if he had been listening. Well, he was listening. But Herb writes, instead, he remained laser-focused on a speech he hoped would set him up for another presidential run in 2020. This, of course, would be banking on the deep hope that Donald Trump loses in November and Hillary Clinton wins. And not necessarily. Okay? Not necessarily. Somebody with the RNC, you know, the RNC, by the way, acted horribly. The delegates tried to... the delegates tried to bring up a vote to allow them to unbind themselves, so to speak, and vote their conscience. The RNC did not even allow that vote to come up for a vote. The delegates tried to initiate a roll call vote, in which I believe they needed at least the majority of the delegates' signatures from a minimum of 7 states to get it. They had at least 9 states, and the RNC said, oh, you know what, 3 of these states dropped out, or 3 of these states changed their mind, without explaining why, without saying which states they were, and just saying, so, no vote. And one of those delegates, one of those states happened to be Alaska, a delegate, or the guy who was the delegate who was collecting and delivering signatures on his petition for the state of Alaska, said that he tried to deliver the petition to the secretary of the convention, and that he or she was either literally hiding or protected by armed guards, and he was led away from even trying to approach them. He said his microphone was turned off on the convention floor. He tried to deliver the petition to an official on the convention floor, and they ignored him. And it was said that the roll call vote was squashed, among other reasons, because it would have closed some of these primary states, or made a motion to close some of these primary states and make it only Republicans voting for the Republican nominee. And an RNC official said that, make no mistake about it, even if Donald Trump wins the presidency, Ted Cruz will primary him in 2020, and they didn't want that happening. But anyway, Hurt goes on to say that Cruz is a man whose arrogance and ego knows no bounds. Has he witnessed Donald Trump? He goes on to say, this is a man who loves himself and his political career so much more than his country. It's just completely exaggerated. He says, don't stay home, Mr. Cruz said weakly, in terms of, again, towards the end of his speech, saying, don't stay home, vote your conscience, he said. Hurt writes, as if to highlight that Donald Trump is not a professional politician. How can he read Ted Cruz's mind? It was a signal, Hurt writes, to the party establishment that they should not vote for Mr. Trump if they don't love him. As Mr. Trump did during the primary race, he will have to win this general election without the help of a professional incumbent politician like Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz will go down with the sinking GOP ship, USS Bush. Good riddance. Okay, now this is just a snarky, over-the-top, ridiculous, unfactual, you know, I don't want to get wimpy here and say mean, but at the same time, mean, vindictive article written by Charles Hertz. You know, it completely skews the facts. It completely misrepresents almost everything that he could possibly misrepresent. And it's incredibly, like I said, incredibly biased. Now, he can be biased if he wants to be biased. But I want to share again, as I said, something that is much more even-handed. And by the way, for what it's worth, this was written by a Christian at the Christian Post by the name of Robert Gagnon, Associate Professor of the New Testament at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary and author of The Bible and Homosexual Practice. Gagnon writes, Ted Cruz was courageous for not endorsing Trump. And by the way, this is not a Ted Cruz puff piece either. Gagnon writes, some are misreading on both ends Senator Ted Cruz's speech last night at the Republican National Convention. Cruz did not tell anyone not to vote for Trump, nor to vote for Trump, contrary to Newt Gingrich's attempt at salvaging matters. He did not say that he would never vote for Trump, as some never-Trumpers have committed themselves to doing, in parentheses, with some reasonable justification, I might add. So this guy could be a never-Trumper as well, or himself, but he's saying, he didn't say don't vote for Trump. He said, vote your conscience, wherever that might lead you, which should be fundamental for all Americans. His comments Thursday morning, Cruz's to the Texas delegation, indicated that he had not yet made up his mind, like many of us. He is definite about not voting for Clinton, as he should be. He is watching and waiting to see what else Trump will do and say between now and Election Day. Cruz does not yet have a clear, conscience-driven choice for the simple reason that as bad as Trump is, and as a Republican nominee, Gagnon writes, he's the worst in my lifetime, the possibility of Hillary getting into the office is apocalyptic, and all the more given that the next president will likely appoint 3, if not 4, Supreme Court justices, Gagnon adds, and no, it is not the case that our chances of getting any good judges are as low with Trump as they are with Clinton. It is a difficult decision whether to abstain from voting for Trump because he is a terrible representative of Republican values and threatens to degrade the party as a whole, even beyond its current state of degradation, or to cast a ballot for Trump as an anti-Hillary vote. And it is. It is extremely difficult for a lot of people. Some of us have made a choice one way or the other. And that choice, by the way, should be respected as a person's conscience. But anyway, this is not a decision that many of us, Gagnon writes, can make lightly or easily, nor is Cruz a liar for not supporting Trump, as many have charged. In an early debate of all the Republican candidates committed to supporting whoever among them might get the nomination, In a subsequent debate, things had soured significantly, and Trump himself refused to commit to supporting a Cruz, Kasich, or Rubio nomination. One can only make a pledge of this sort on the premise if things should remain more or less as they are now. One can imagine a slew of scenarios in which such a pledge would have to be withdrawn if certain statements or actions took place on the part of the presumptive nominee. Cruz has certainly had ample grounds for withholding an endorsement for the time being, grounds both personal and political, and no one can fault him for that. It took courage for Cruz to do what he did last night, not, as Trump supporters would have it and as Charles Hurt would have it, petulance. Under the boos he received, most, virtually all, candidates would have wilted. I commend him for holding his ground, even though that ground may not yet be his final position. It is where he should be at the present moment. Now, again, that's a guy supporting Ted Cruz in an extent, but not in an over-the-top way. In a very even-handed, factual, non-emotional, non-whining, you know, the article from Charles Hurt. The piece from Charles Hurt was whining. Nothing that Ted Cruz did was whining, but that piece was. But, again, this over-the-top, this you're a traitor if you don't do this, you're a you're a Hillary supporter if you don't vote this way. If you don't support Trump, you're voting for Hillary, or you're supporting Hillary, or you're delivering a half vote for Hillary. Well, if I don't support Hillary, or if I don't vote for Hillary, doesn't that mean that I'm delivering a half vote for Donald Trump? I mean, the logic doesn't work. And personally, I'll say that with the antics of the Republican Party, which, by the way, a Republican Party convention that on one night ended with an Islamic Muslim prayer, and on another night had an openly gay Peter Thiel saying that he was proud to be gay, proud to be a Republican, and that culture wars are phony, which is the other part of this show. Culture wars are phony and a distraction. The Republican Party has headed down the wrong road. And the Republican Party and the RNC has engaged in such power-hungry, power-maintaining, authoritarian behavior that why do they deserve anybody's loyalty? Now, I can understand somebody saying, well, we got to stop Hillary. Again, I'm just not convinced that Trump is that much better of an option. In some ways, I think he's worse, personally. But, you know, this is not a team thing where, okay, time to put on my jersey and support the Republican Party and Republican nominee no matter what. Jerry Falwell, I can't spend a lot of time on this because I've already made a segue, but Jerry Falwell basically, I'll post this on the American Faith Today Facebook page. Russell Moore, the leader of the Southern Baptist Convention, I believe, it'll have his exact title here. It escapes me at the moment. Russell Moore, president of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, is somebody who has stayed pretty much a never Trump, against Trump kind of guy. Jerry Falwell, of course, jumped right on that bus pretty much right away. And you've got Jerry Falwell when he's confronted with what Russell Moore has said. This from ChristianPost.com. Russell Moore writing an op-ed that argued Trump's most illogical support comes from evangelicals, and additionally contended that in order to support Trump, evangelicals and conservatives must repudiate everything they believe. Well, Falwell responded, I don't know what Russell Moore's politics really are. I don't know if he is a closet liberal or if he is a conservative. And again, that's a lie. That's a smear job. That's a mistruth. To say that I don't know what his politics are, but he might be a closet liberal, well, that's pretty much you saying that I know he represents himself as a conservative, but maybe he's one of them closet liberals. Again, the rhetoric, I can say we need to stop this. Of course, me saying that isn't going to do a whole heck of a lot, but we should. You know, at a time in which everybody is claiming that they're calling for unity, and we're all insulting each other. And look, I am somebody who is still committed never Trump. That's me. I'm also committed never Hillary. And I might even be committed never Gary Johnson. In some ways he's better than the other two to me. But I have problems with him as well. I don't know what I'm going to do in November. I know I won't stay home. And I know I'll vote my conscience either way, and I'll try to certainly do some praying and get God's input on the matter. And I don't think God's going to tell me or instruct me or lead me to vote for Donald Trump. But if he did, I would do my best to follow that. But, you know, it just, again, like I said, it's exhausting to me. It's exasperating to me. We're absolutely eating each other alive. We're absolutely destroying each other. We're throwing each other under the bus. All, again, while calling supposedly for unity. And not respecting a person's individual conscience, a person's individual conviction. If I, as a Christian, if someone else as a Christian believes that they have a conviction from God to vote, not vote a certain way, to support, not support a candidate or candidates, then another Christian should respect that. And that should be the end of it. I mean, after all, he is the one that rules over all and that we follow and seek guidance from and obedience, and that we obey. But anyway, that urging, that prompting, that conviction from the Holy Spirit even. And I'm sure this has been an election where many, many people have prayed fervently about what to do, which direction to go in. Now, like I said, Peter Thiel, in the remaining 15 minutes or so here, Peter Thiel, and I did spend more time on that than I meant to, but Peter Thiel, like I said, he's openly gay, co-founder of PayPal, talked about phony culture wars and distractions. Well, I've got a few stories, and I'll try to share as many of them with you as I can. And, of course, I share stories like this seemingly all the time, or very often, not all the time, but stories that show that the culture wars, of course, are, in fact, very real. Do they distract us from some things? Perhaps, but they are very real. They are very coordinated. They do have a very destructive, in my book, purpose. And it is something that no one who's a Christian should ever shy away from. Or, as I've been using this kind of rhetoric myself, disengage from. And not on these matters. And, you know, I've made mention online that there's a part of me that almost feels like I need to disengage a while from politics because of how exasperating this is. But regardless, here's a story from End of the American Dream, or an article. Governments to Christians, don't you dare speak out against the sexual sin in society. And Michael Snyder, one of his blogs, he gives some examples there. I'm going to try to go a little bit quicker since time is scarce. And unfortunately, I'll just... I'm not going to read through the beginning, but basically he points out our world has turned upside down, evil has become good, good has become evil, the rules have totally flipped over their head. If you choose to live a lifestyle that's morally wrong, you are celebrated by society. If you choose to speak out against the sexual sin that is exploding everywhere around us, then you are considered to be a hater and a bigot. Government's now trying to pass hate speech laws, making it a crime to speak against sexual sin. There's your introduction. Now, some of the examples that he gives as far as sexual sin, polyamory. He references a recent article in The Guardian that highlighted how the city of Portland, Oregon in particular, has become a hotbed for those who are into the poly lifestyle. Polyamory, the practice of intimate relationships involving more than two people with the consent of everyone involved, or as the article says, basically, as the term is, swingers. In recent years, polyamory is working its way to become a household term. Researchers have estimated that 4 to 5% of Americans practice some form of consensual non-monogamy. A 2014 blog post by Psychology Today revealed that almost 10 million people have agreed to allow satellite lovers in their relationships, which includes poly couples, swinging couples, and others practicing sexual non-monogamy. And in Portland, home to swingers clubs, the most strip bars per capita, and annual porn festivals. Would you say that Portland is a little bit liberal, perhaps? Maybe just a tad? It seems that you can't throw a stone without finding a poly relationship. Although there's no official data supporting the exact number, various meetup groups boast a few thousand members each, while other Facebook groups have hundreds. He goes on to write, Snyder does, another lifestyle choice that has been experiencing tremendous growth is bisexuality. According to the New York Post, one study of 30,000 U.S. adults found that the number of Americans that have dabbled on both sides of the fence has more than doubled since 1990, going from 3.1% who admitted to bisexual experiences, relationships, encounters, to almost 8%, 7.7% in 2014. And you know what? Let's put our thinking caps on a little bit. Is this a matter of born that way, or is this a matter of choice where all of a sudden you have the number of bisexual encounters more than doubling? Well, you know, common sense to me, and I did the show on homosexuality, whether it's a choice, whether it's born that way, et cetera, but common sense to me tells me, or leads me down the road, that this is completely choice. That it's just kind of like, yeah, why not? Why not? Why not have a bisexual encounter? Why not have a bisexual experience? It might be fun. And, you know, we are living in that time, I will say. And I do believe we are living in those, in these end times, in these end days. We, I happen to believe, are at the latter part of the end days, which are referenced as being like the days of Sodom, like the days of Gibeah, which was like Sodom. And, you know, we are at a time, I believe, as well, in which you're going to have more and more. Now, don't get carried away and don't get scared, because God is always there as well to protect, to guide, to lead. But I do believe that at this time you're going to see more and more evil influence, demonic influence, as we get closer to the time that Antichrist makes his appearance here on earth. That's a belief that I have. But Snyder goes on to say isn't just the world that is embracing these alternative lifestyles. You have the church as well, the Western Division of the United Methodist Church, which just decided to elect their first openly gay bishop in defiance of church prohibitions on homosexuality. Reverend Karen Olivito, senior pastor of Glide Memorial Church in San Francisco, elected bishop of the church's Western Division at a conference Friday night in Scottsdale, Arizona, said, "I think at this moment I have a glimpse of the realm of God." Well, unfortunately, no, she doesn't. The realm of God forgives homosexuals once they repent, but doesn't celebrate homosexuality as just another lifestyle, just another form of love. Now, Snyder also goes on to reference that we have these hate speech laws that are being made, that are being pressed to be put into practice. 60 homes in Germany were recently raided by police in a hate speech crackdown. According to a report from Breitbart, German police recently raided homes of 60 people suspected of writing what is deemed hate speech on social media in Germany, in an effort to fight against verbal radicalization, according to German government. And Germany's got all sorts of problems with the Muslim Islamic invasion over there. That's referenced here. But anyway, they raided 60 homes in a hate speech crackdown. In Canada, a new hate speech bill has just been introduced that would hit anyone found guilty of hate speech against transgender individuals with up to 2 years in prison. And by the way, up in Canada, I referenced a story a while back in which a man pretended to be transgender to harass, abuse, and assault women at a women's shelter. But now they want to absolutely disregard women, not give any care whatsoever to the protection and the safety and the well-being and the peace of mind of women, but instead try to convict people of hate speech against transgender individuals. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, has announced this bill that would criminalize anti-transgender speech, again, with violators receiving up to 2 years in prison. In New York City, again, something that you're probably somewhat familiar with, the Commission on Human Rights states that you could be fined up to $250,000 for each time that you offend a transgender individual, including the wrong, ridiculously made-up pronoun. If you don't call them Z or whatever, or if they refer to themselves as he and you call them she or vice versa, then you can be fined up to $250,000 or for not allowing a transgender individual to use the restroom of their choice. And, you know, truth is being absolutely pushed out. Common sense is being pushed out. God's natural order, natural creation of things is being pushed out so that we can celebrate delusion, absolute delusion, along these same lines. I'm trying to decide here, do I want to go? I suppose I'll go with the NBA, and hopefully I'll have time with both of these. I'll cover the NBA quickly. From stream.org, the NBA has decided to move the All-Star game out of Charlotte over their bathroom laws that they say are discriminatory against transgender individuals and that limit anti-discrimination protection for lesbian, gay, and transgender people. They simply affirm biology. They simply affirm natural law, even if you will. They simply stand up for common sense. And, you know, with all that, some of what's happened at Target, since they've done their thing there as far as opening up bathrooms and dressing rooms, whether it's somebody taking pictures of women in the dressing room, whether it's somebody taking pictures of underage girls in the bathroom, both of those things that happened in Target stores, you know, it keeps people out who would want to abuse such an open invitation. It tries to keep them out. Nothing is ever going to be 100%, but it tries to keep them out. It tries to value and affirm and defend every individual's privacy, not certain individuals' so-called rights. But anyway, the NBA has decided that because North Carolina is so bigoted that they're not going to have the All-Star game next year, Michael Brown, again, I'm not going to have time to go through all this, but Michael Brown at Christian Post absolutely nails them to the wall on this, pointing out that they are moving the All-Star game to New Orleans. Well, New Orleans has the same set of laws or the same set of standards in which they, at this point anyway, Louisiana is not allowing transgenders to pick the bathroom of their choice. So it's the exact same situation. When the NBA had events before in North Carolina, it was the exact same situation. So the NBA is basically just throwing a fit and claiming to be tolerant. And by the way, you've got almost literally half the states in the country, 24 of them from the looks of things, that have filed suits against the federal government protesting the Obama administration's overreach in this bathroom law area, trying to force schools to comply, as Brown points out, with radical LGBT activism. And as Brown also points out, Louisiana is being rewarded and North Carolina is being punished when it's the exact same situation in both of those states. But they can be good little liberals and progressives and get credit from all their little buddies. Now, what I will close with here, CBN News, California forces LGBT family lessons on second graders. The California State Board of Education voted unanimously to include a comprehensive study of LGBT history. How much LGBT history is there even out there? Especially transgender history. Anyway, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender history in public schools. The curriculum will be taught to elementary, middle, and high school students in history and social science classes. It begins in second grade. Students will learn about different family structures, including families with LGBT parents. In fourth grade, students will learn about the history of LGBT people in California and the country's first gay rights organizations in the 1950s. They'll be taught about Harvey Milk, who either was a pedophile or had connections to pedophiles. No problem there. But anyway, the California State Board of Education has forced this upon every school, every public school, every parent, whether they want to have any part in it or not. So these culture wars are not the least bit phony. They're trying to, again, push God out. They're trying to remove natural law. They're trying to remove objective reality to celebrate nonsense in the name of tolerance. And that is something that we should always stand against, and that is something that we should always pray, that as much as possible that truth wins out, and that we do win as